Coming up on Boston Public Radio, Tsarnaev and Hernandez. Were there warning signs of future violence that were simply missed or ignored? Aren't such signs always missed or ignored? Then the Herald's Steve Buckley talks about the dismantling of the Celtics, while with July 4th fast approaching, the man behind the barbecue Bible resolves eternal debates about the grill, Marjorie.
WGBH's Emily Rooney joins us for another spectacular edition of Emily's List. Then our weekly news quiz. This week, two rock and roll aficionados battle it out. Peter Simon, who's photographed dozens of our rock legends, and Joyce Lenihan, who's managed the Lemonheads and has a heretofore unknown, at least by me, influence on our local and national politics. Stay tuned for all that on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Jim Browdy, I am Marjorie Egan. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hey there, Marjorie.
Hi.
How do you? Now, in the days after the marathon bombings, we learned a lot about the life of Tamerlan Tsarnaev, including what many said should have been warning signs. In the days since suspicion around Hernandez's involvement in the death of Odin Lloyd, we learned a lot about the teen, the college, and the early Patriot years of Aaron Hernandez. Many said they should have been warning signs. But Marjorie, are these just the latest examples of hindsight being you know what? Don't we all, we've had this discussion a million times, don't we all see warning signs, usually of things less dramatic, a kid not studying, and then he drops out two years later, a coworker coming in late to work, a year later he or she has a breakdown. So our question for you guys at 877-301-8970, when you see warning signs, should you do something? Have you done something? And more realistically, can you ever really do anything? And by the way, we're not talking about law enforcement. We're talking about real people dealing with real-world situations in their work lives, their personal lives, all those sort of things.
Well, you've raised kids. I've raised three kids. I mean, we all know our friends' kids. Some kids have had problems. Some kids haven't. You have the best intentions of the parents, really good parents trying to do the right thing. And, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Well, yeah, and also it is true that every single time something unpleasant happens, I don't mean some obviously horrible like the Tsarnaev consequences, nor what Hernandez is purported to have done. I mean, everything comes crystal clear. We've both interviewed Jack Levin, for example, who's the world's premier expert on mass and serial killings. How many times we ask him, the end of every conversation from Northeastern, by the way, the end of every conversation is based on what we know now of what we knew then, could this crime or these set of crimes have been prevented? And what's his answer? 9 out of 10 times, if not 99 out of 100 times, the answer is no. But every time you see a set of facts, you say to yourself, God, if I had just acted, if I had just done something.
It's the big cliche. Hindsight is always 20/20. I think the classic case happened right here in Boston.
Which
we had the case of Charles Stewart and his wife, Carol DeMatey Stewart. Those of you who were around here at the time may recall. She was a lawyer. He worked for Caicos Furs. She's at a birthing class with him at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. They come out of the birthing class, and he shoots her in the back of the head. Now, it turns out they didn't have an ideal marriage, but
and I don't shoots think, himself, by the way, we should say.
And shoots himself,
and attempt to make it seem it was somebody
but
else.
But the point is, she slept next to this man, got up every morning next to this man for years.
Right,
they were married.
Right.
If you have no idea if your spouse is planning to kill you, I think that a lot of us think or overestimate our ability to stop the bad things that are going on in people's lives.
Our number is 877-301-8970. How many times have you encountered situations where when looking back you say, had I been clear mind, had I acted, I possibly could have prevented something that frankly should have been prevented.
I think we think too much of our influence on other people. You hear this all the time. You particularly hear it, not to be too sad, but you hear it in suicides. People always say, well, if I'd done something for Joe or if I'd done something for Jane, maybe, but I think you're overestimating your own influence on Joe and Jane. But let's just go back to Aaron Hernandez, some of the warning signs. Mm-hmm. And this is a lot that came from his mother when his mother was interviewed and his brother by USA Today. They talked about how Hernandez's father died when the kid was 16 and things really changed, according to the mother and brother, after the father's death. Suddenly he's smoking a lot of marijuana. He's hanging around with a bad crowd down in Bristol. Does very well playing football, obviously. But when he gets to University of Florida in his freshman year, before he turned 18, he's arrested for getting into a fight with a bouncer at an off-campus bar. Then the Orlando paper down there reports that he's questioned by Gainesville, Florida police about a shooting that injured two men after a Gators game that fall. Then he's suspended from the season in 2008, again for testing positive repeatedly for marijuana. So it goes on and on and on. He's a
But those are warning signs about which you should do, could do something. You know why they didn't do something? As Dan Shaughnessy said to us a couple of days ago, because starting at 12 years old, he was a huge star. So in that circumstance, even if people knew what they apparently knew and had tried to act, you can't do that in those circumstances,
well,
right?
I mentioned this to you this morning. I've been reading all these Whitey Bulger books. And, you know, there were nine children in the Whitey Bulger's family. Bill Bulger went on to be the Senate president. Some people like him, some people don't like him, but he's certainly not a guy that was off shooting anybody. So why did one child in this family of nine become a serial mass murderer? And when you read about his life, he was a troublemaker from the word go. He was 6 and 7 years old, not paying attention to school, skipping school, telling that, you know, refusing to go to his catechism classes on Sunday morning. His father,
that is a sure sign of horrible
things
to come.
That's always a sure sign. But I guess the point is, yeah,
did you go to catechism?
I did go to catechism, and I was one of those kids that when my mother told me to do something, I did it. when Whitey Bulger's mother told him to do something, you know, it was. He didn't do it, and he didn't do anything for his father either, even though his father was really tough on him from a disciplinary standpoint.
877-301-8970. So if you want to talk about Tsarnaev and Hernandez and whether or not we should have seen warning signs, the collective we should have seen warning signs and done something which might have prevented what apparently happened, that's fine. But also, I prefer it in your personal lives. You really can think of a mountain of situations where, you know, your kid's friend is acting out, and you're saying, do I say something? Do I say something to the parents? Do I say something to the teacher, the principal? 99 times out of 100, you never say anything because you think it's not your business, and maybe it's an aberrational moment and it's a sign of nothing. But you know, part of the problem is we never act. And I am one, I don't like being intruded upon. I don't like my life being intruded upon. We've discussed this in many different contexts. But there really is this bad Samaritan view of our role in the world. There really is. There's notion, we're going to stay out of everybody else's business. We don't want to get in trouble. We don't want to get in the middle of a mess. And as a result, lots of messes happen that potentially, we could have done something about, small and large, by the way.
Let's bring it back to our lives, which you're not involving.
Let's bring it back to your life instead.
Serial killers.
Okay,
go ahead. I mean, I don't know any serial killers in my personal life. But the classic example is when you have teenagers and one of your kids comes home and tells you about their dear friend,
exactly,
Joey, smoking pot,
exactly,
or drinking or stealing liquor or some wild party they were at Joey's house when Joey's parents weren't there. Now, that puts you in a dilemma.
Do you call the parent?
Well, are you going to call the parents and betray the trust that your kid showed in telling you about this? I mean, there's no easy answers to these kinds of things. Or if your kid's friend is doing a bad thing, sometimes when you do call the parents to say, listen, I love your kid, but my daughter says he's doing X, Y, and Z, which is a bad thing. The parents often don't want to hear that, and they'll tell you, you don't know what you're talking about, and there goes your friendship with those parents. I mean, so they're very treacherous waters. There's no right and wrong answer. And sometimes people do rehabilitate themselves. You hear this all the time of people that do go very bad childhoods, and they get into one of these groups when they get out of jail, if it comes to that, and they do manage to turn their lives around, but lots of people don't. Hernandez, it's a fascinating case because his mother thought, and his coach in Florida thought, he turned a corner. He turned a corner. And when you get up in 2010, you get the big, was it 2010 when he got the big money from the Patriots?
No, that's what he's doing. The big money was last year when he got $40 million.
When he cried. And, you know, he said the Patriot way has changed his life and blah, blah, blah. And he gave $50,000 to the Myercraft Foundation and stuff. There were people, including his family, who thought this was a sign of his turning around. Now, you contrast that to Aaron Hernandez yesterday in the courtroom, where reading the lists of charges against him, the guy was totally emotionless. There was no crying there, was there? 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. Can we fix the problems of other people that we see with these terrible, when we see the warning signs, whether it's your kids or somebody else's kids or whether it's somebody that's really in serious trouble like this? When the warning signs are there, can you fix them? Can they turn themselves around? Let's go to David in Arlington. What do you think, David?
Hi, I wanted to relate a a story concerning me and a coworker where I did something because I was worried about what he might do. In about 1980, I worked at Wang, and another young guy who was working there from the South, and he started talking about how he thought his wife was cheating with his boss. And he talked about it all the time, and he talked about, you know, how he had guns and this kind of stuff. And I became quite worried that, you know, he might actually be planning to hurt somebody. And I spoke to some more senior person at work who finally, you know, called him in and asked about it, kind of informally, you know, not a work discipline kind of thing or anything. And obviously nothing happened.
Second-guess the poor choice of words. Did you have some doubts about whether or not it was appropriate for you to report this person to your superior?
Of course. I agonized over it. But I thought, you know, it seems like a serious danger to me, serious enough that I ought to run the risk of being made a fool of or
I totally agree.
Well, good for you.
Friendship or things like that.
I think you're the outlier. I think you're the outlier. Dave, did the guy ever do anything untoward in any of the subsequent years as far
not
as
that I know of?
Good. Okay.
You know, maybe he planned to, maybe he didn't. I'll never know.
David, thank you for the call.
You bring up a good point. You know, in every office or in most offices, there is the person that you look around and think, you know, after these terrible mass murders, look around and think, you know, Susie over there. Joe
could
over there.
Be that person.
I could see him shooting up the entire office. You know that things are not going well.
By the way,
well.
You're laughing about it, but on a serious
I'm
note,
serious.
After Mucko McDermott happened in, was it Wakefield?
Where, I know,
is that
he
where
killed
that happened?
Seven people in
right,
his workplace.
Right, in his workplace. That's what everybody in Massachusetts was going through. Is there a Mucko McDermott in our place? Somebody who isn't acting quite as crazy as he was reported to have acted prior to these killings, but is there somebody who's sort of on the edge? But see, David was talking about somebody who we thought could have done something more violent. There are everyday things that we encounter, the things you're talking about, your kid's friend who you believe is smoking a joint after school or something. And I'd say more often than not, most of us are not Davids. Most of us are on the side of staying out of things. And
I've done both with mixed results.
What does mixed results mean?
Well, meaning that, like I said, parents do not want to hear sometimes the bad things that their kids are doing, or they're defensive about it, or they think you're accusing them of being a bad parent, or they have blinders on. And little Johnny would never do that. Oh no, that's not true. And then your own kid is very upset because you've tattletaled in their view.
Tattletaled.
Well,
you've
tattletaled, and it's not that easy. Sam, from wherever you are, hi,
Rhode
Sam.
Island.
Thank
hi, Sam.
You for calling.
Hey, how are you guys? Love to have you back on the air.
Thanks.
Hey, listen, so I got an even better story. My son comes home from a party and says, I am very concerned about my friend. He's been smoking pot a lot. Now he had the owner of the house steal some liquor from the parents, and he showed up high and got drunk at the party. And, oh, by the way, he also wakes up in the middle of the night and steals another car and drives around in it.
So I said,
what do you want to do? And he's a freshman in high school. And he says, well, I really think that we should say something. And we talked about the pros and the cons and what could be the fallout. And he says, I'm really concerned about him. I love him. He's a good friend of mine. We need to do this. Well, suffice it to say that nobody is friends with anybody anymore. This was a woman who would have taken my son in if we had died. And now he's like, you know, public enemy number one, because she told my husband, I don't want to know. I don't want, not that I didn't believe it, not that little Johnny didn't do it, but I don't want to know. And it's terrible. It got ugly. And so let me tell you, I'll never say anything ever again.
That's what I was going to ask you. That's the unfortunate moral of the story, right?
It truly is. So you have these things like, oh, we should have known. We should have said something. Well, what the hell are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to say something, and it's going to come back on you. And you know what? You're never going to be able to tell your side of it. So you're going to look like the idiot. So I am so sad to tell you that sometimes it does not take a village to raise a child.
It's a great line, Sam. Thank you for the call.
I'm with you. It's very fraught with difficulties. I mean, I have had situations myself where I told somebody something and – it's never been the same since. I mean, they waved to me.
What's that?
Grudgingly.
What'd
you tell? I'm not going to tell you because I live here and they might be listening right now. So it was. It did not go well.
I know what it is. Marjorie's told many a story about going to a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah where the mothers were dressed more inappropriately than the children, than the 13-year-olds. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Stephen just emails and says, if your kid is voted most likely to reload in high school, you might want to get him some counseling.
No, it's really true. We're going to discuss, by the way, as the show goes along, we're going to discuss a little bit of Hernandez with Steve Buckley, our next guest. We're also going to discuss both Tsarnaev, the older brother, and Aaron Hernandez when Emily Rooney joins us right after one.
And I also want to point something out here. Hernandez, as we know, is at the University of Florida. Now, I'm not a big football fan, but I did not realize that when Hernandez was scoring all these touchdowns for the Gators at the University of Florida, Who was the quarterback? You told me this morning.
Well, at least part of the time, Tim Tebow.
So the holiness and the Tebowing of Tim Tebow apparently did not wear off on Aaron Hernandez, at least considering the trouble he's in now. Okay, up next we're going to talk with Boston Herald sports writer Steve Buckley about the Celtics' blockbuster trade, Doc Rivers leaving, and the Brooklyn Nets that officially ends the Celtics' Big Three era. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Years ago, when President Obama made a brief trip to Ghana, he got personal.
I have the blood of Africa within me.
Now he's making the longest trip to Africa of his presidency. We'll talk about that and other news on that dynamic continent. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you. And Grogan & Company, fine art auctioneers, assisting New England families with the sale of their fine art, antiques, silver, and jewelry since 1988. Located in historic Dedham, Massachusetts, and at GroganCO.com.
And EBSCOhost, informing the world. EBSCO's technical managers and software engineers use emerging technologies to return results for over 100 million search requests per day. Over 40 open technology positions at EBSCOhost.com.
I'm Dana from Sharon, Massachusetts, and I support WGBH because Boston Public Radio gives me information that really deepens my understanding of the world. It's intelligent and it's thoughtful and analytical with just the right dose of humor, and because it's the home of Jim and Marjorie.
You're listening to a third hour of a special edition of Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan.
Well, I've been listening to them for a couple of years now, and when they moved to WGBH, I was just thrilled because I've always thought that their brand of news analysis were more appropriate for public radio. They really pulled me over to become a supporter. I was one of those people who would flip to GBH occasionally in the car, but now I actually have it on a dedicated button on my radio. I've always believed in putting my money where my mouth is, and I've always tried to be a supporter of the things that I believe in. So now it's Boston Public Radio.
I love that woman saying, I believe in putting my money where my mouth is. You call 888-897-9424, or you give online at WGBHnews.org. This is it. This is the final day of fundraising this week, your last chance to support Boston Public Radio during this campaign. If you have already given, thank you. If you haven't done it yet, what are you waiting for? I am Jim Browdy, obviously here with Marjorie Egan, and with more, our colleague, Anne Mostow. Hey, Anne.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Marjorie. Thanks for having me. This Monday, WGBH had $200,000 to raise before the end of the month, thanks to thousands of listeners pitching in with contributions everywhere from $5 to $10,000 and beyond. That amount is down to $68,000. it's not about one person giving that much. It's about a whole community of listeners doing whatever they can. And that's why right now you're being asked to be one of the next 60 listeners on the phones or online before the end of the show today. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
And, you know, it is so easy to do. It's much easier, I think, for a lot of us when you can give like $5, $10, $20, $30 a month instead of this big chunk of money, because then it doesn't – just a little bit out of your pocket every single month. And it's so worthwhile, because when you support Boston Public Radio with a $100 gift of support right now, WGBH will say thanks with two tickets to the WGBH Craft Beer Festival, Saturday, July 13th from 6 to 10 at the gorgeous WGBH Studios in Brighton. Here's what you get: to sample all kinds of brews of beers from Boston Beer Works, Slum Brew, Pretty Thing, and many, many more. There's going to be live music on the main stage and presentations from some of Boston's best brewmasters, not to mention some of the best food trucks in town. Plus, you'll be brewing up more great programs by supporting Boston Public Radio. Here's the number and the website, 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org.
So Marjorie mentioned a $100 contribution. Let me talk about a $50 gift to WGBH. Here's what you get. We'll put $25 right back in your pocket by way of a $25 gift certificate to White Flower Farm. You can use your $25 certificate either in person or by visiting them at whiteflowerfarm.com. I think you know White Flower Farm is the premier dealer of plants, shrubs, bulbs, and their catalog is one of the most cherished by gardeners all over the country. This gift certificate comes your way in addition to any other thank you gift you choose. It's a different kind of two-for-one deal. So the number again is 888-897-9424, or you do your part online at WGBHnews.org.
That's right, Jim. When you give to WGBH for the first time, you're supporting intelligent reporting that looks at every story from as many angles as we can. You're supporting a place where you can also still turn to hear Celtic music every weekend. You're stepping up, casting a vote, taking a stand for quality radio that informs and entertains. Spread the word as a WGBH supporter. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
The number again, 888-897-9424, or you can always give online, again, really easy, WGBHnews.org. Remember, this is your last chance to support this program, me and Jim, and all the great radio here on WGBH. If you tune in every day, if you find yourself nodding along with the things I'm saying, or you find yourself yelling at Jim, and, you know, I can't blame you there, guess what? This is your chance to really speak out and take part in this conversation. Make that gift of support in any amount, 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org.
Somerville's Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project consider themselves an idea, not a brewery. In fact, they don't even have a brewery to call home. And while they have a sum total of 4 employees, their dedication to good time artisanal beers has made them local legends at taps and taverns all over town. And they're just one of the many local brewers you'll meet at WGBH's first annual craft beer festival, Saturday, July 13th from 7 to 10 p.m. Sample local brews from the likes of Harpoon, Boston Beer Works, Slum Brew, Smutty Nose, and more, while munching on tasty treats from some of the best food trucks in town and listening to some great live local bands on the main stage. Support Boston Public Radio with a gift of $100 and we'll say thanks with a pair of tickets. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Some stories, as you know, about athletes have nothing to do with sports. Some have everything to do with it. We've had a mountain of both this week in New England. In the space of 3 days, a patriot becomes an expatriate, then an accused murderer, while the most storied franchise in pro basketball history, the hometown Celtics, becomes unrecognizable. Oh, and the Bruins lost a heartbreaker. Joining us to discuss all three of those things is the terrific sports columnist for the Boston Herald, and much more importantly, a child of Cambridge, Massachusetts, Steve Buckley. Good to see you again.
Hi,
what
Steve.
I screwed up. I thought we were talking about the first place Red Sox. I just got my notes mixed up.
We're doing that at 2 o'clock today, yeah. Right after the show.
Well, now, let me start with this, Steve Buckley. My buddy over here, Jim Browdy, has been obsessed with the fact that the Celtics coach, Doc Rivers, left his contract early to abandon ship, and he says it's a terrible betrayal and he's disloyal. And is Doc Rivers some terrible person for leaving the Boston Celtics for a better, or in his view anyway, deal?
I don't think he's a terrible person. I think he's a great guy, but he certainly made a me-first business decision. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And he can talk all he wants about listen, I think he changed his mind. I think when he signed the deal a couple of years ago, he saw himself making boatloads of money. He absolutely, and I can tell this in the bottom of my heart, he loves Boston. He loves being here. He liked his place in the Back Bay. He liked walking around the streets. He's an intellectual. He liked the history of the city. But then you wake up to the sobering reality that the team is aged fast and isn't going to win anytime soon. And all of a sudden, there's a shiny bauble on a different tree that attracted him.
Yeah, but he knew they were aging fast. He knew that Garnett and Pierce, who apparently are going to Brooklyn Nets, he knew they were getting old. So when he signed the contract 2 years ago, to me, and I don't know him, but I love him from afar, I have to say. Everything I've ever seen about him, I'd love the loyalty he talked about, the commitment to Boston. It just rubs me the wrong way that you then say, I want to go to where there are greener, well, not greener in terms of dollars, but brighter pastures. Does that not bother you?
It does. It. But I think the difference between you and me is I work in sports and I deal with this on a daily basis. And you always have athletes who, when they sign the contract, I did this for the love of the game. I love this city and the duck boats and on and on and on. And then when it comes time to sign the next deal, I always use the example of Mark McGwire. Mm-hmm. And when Mark McGwire was breaking the home run record, when one of the kids who caught like his 62nd home run ball, and the kid was going to sell for all kinds of money, and Mark McGwire was quoted along the line, I'm paraphrasing, saying, you know, he should give the baseball back. He should do this. You know, this isn't a business. This is the pastoral beauty of the game. And then a year later, when he was signing his next deal, he's like, hey, well, you know, I got to think of my family. This is a business. So when that kind of money is involved, it always will be a business, even though, and obviously you sound like a big jilted Celtics fan, and God bless you. But in the end, you ever see the movie Bronx Tale?
Oh, yes. Of course,
Little
Collegio is upset yes. because the Yankees lost the World Series to the Pirates, and Sonny says to him, he says, "Don't. Do you think Mickey Mantle cares if your father loses his job? Do you think his father cares? Do you think Mickey Mantle cares if you die?" I mean, so this
that was a great moment, actually.
You're the guy who can recite the whole script of The Godfather. Is that not correct?
And then some, yes.
I knew that was the case. Let's hear a little bit. You know, the whole issue is who initiated this whole thing. Danny Ainge, the general manager. Here's Ainge at a press conference after it was clear that Rivers was leaving town.
You know, I had planned on Doc being our coach all along. We had discussions about him being Greg Popovich, Jerry Sloan, Red Auerbach, breaking Red Auerbach's all-time win record as a Celtic and being here for a long time. So I never really had thought about this day.
You know, after I saw Danny Ainge looking so distraught, like he was going to start crying, then I felt worse about Doc Rivers. I was more over on Jim's side about Doc Rivers. He looked crushed.
I think he'll get over it.
Listen to you.
I don't mean to sound like the jilted sports writer who doesn't appreciate the love of all the games that I cover, because I do. And I dearly wish we'd be here right now talking about that great Bruins season, because it's one of the best postseasons I ever covered. And the whole Patrice Bergeron playing with all kinds of dents in his body is a great story. But when it comes to the money aspect of what I do for a living, I tend to take a jaundiced view, because I've just seen it for so many years. The only thing that's changed I started in the business in 1978, Marjorie, and the only thing that's changed since 1978 is the number of dollar figure amount.
Okay, so
everything else is the
same. So it was like this in 78. Was it like this in 48? Was it like this in 28?
Joe DiMaggio held out. See, people forget, because we put heroes from yesteryear on Wheaties boxes and pronounce them as heroes forever.
He held out for Marilyn Monroe. That's what Steve is going.
No, he retired from Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah,
but Joe DiMaggio held out for more money, because the Yankees were notorious skinflints. The Yankees were always very upset because the Red Sox, who never won anything, always drove to the ballpark in limousines. Because, and there was a joke back in the 40s that the Red Sox took Cadillacs to Fenway Park, the Braves took the T, and or the MTA, as they would have called it back then. The Red Sox, Yawkey notoriously overpaid players who didn't produce World Series. The Yankees notoriously underpaid players who won World Series. And Joe DiMaggio held out. Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale, the twin towers of pitching for the Dodgers in the early 60s, held out as a tandem. And they wanted
what was
to get
it, $100,000? Oh, yeah. Incredible.
So, in other words, even though it's millions and millions and millions now as opposed to $100,000, it's been like this for decades and decades and decades. This is not necessarily new. So,
the difference is I can say, as a sports fan, not a sports writer, maybe the mindset was the same, but until there was free agency in sports,
when
the players had leverage.
I will give you one more, and I do know my history, is that Babe Ruth, a reporter once said, "How do you feel about making more money than the president?" Which would have been Calvin Coolidge.
I remember. This is a great line.
He says, "I had a better year than he did."
That is a great line. So with everybody leaving, though, with Garnett leaving, with Paul Pierce leaving, I feel like Paul Pierce has been here forever. Years ago when he was – I mean, how many years ago was it, the notorious story when he was stabbed and survived miraculously in the nightclub because he had the leather jacket on? That was, what, 10 years ago, 12 years ago? How long ago was that?
Paul Pierce is a fascinating story because it was more like 15 years ago.
Wow, but so
Paul
he's been
Pierce,
here forever.
Is an interesting story because if it weren't for so many other stories going on right now, if it was just a matter, I mean, I don't want to compare Paul Pierce with Ted Williams, but consider that when Ted Williams retired, it was just Ted Williams. Or I'll do a better one as Yaz because it's more recent and they're sort of on the same, you know, Paul Pierce isn't the greatest as Ted Williams was. But when Yaz retired at the end of the 1983 season, the spotlight shifted solely on Yaz. We had a Yaz weekend. It was a three-day festival. And the last 2 months, every visiting ballpark you went to, there was a Yaz day. And it was all about Yaz. It should be to some extent like that with Paul Pierce now, except that the Bruins just lost in the Stanley Cup Finals. The Red Sox are in first place. Aaron Hernandez, on and on and on with that. And even on his own team, there's the looming specter of Kevin Garnett leaving, Doc Rivers leaving, Rajon Rondo apparently assuming a perch of leadership. So in an unfair way, Paul Pierce's story as a great Celtic leaving Boston is being overshadowed.
Oh,
last question about the Celtics.
That's too bad.
Steve Buckley. Is what's the for those
Doggy
who are
dog.
Celtic obsessed, and my loyalty is because I'm a Philly boy, we're always split between the Sixers and the Celtics, but I love the Celtics. So they get, what is it? Former Mr. Kim Kardashian, whatever his name is, from what's the guy's name? Chris Humphries, the guy from the Nets. They got nothing except draft picks. So essentially this is going to be a drought sort
of
period.
I love the way you just so dismissed Humphries.
But is that not
with a wave of the hand.
But is that not a fair description? I'm sure he's a very fine person. But
he's got nothing to do with this.
Okay, so what is it? Draft picks. So this is about the future.
It is all about the future.
So does that mean the next couple of years they're going to be as bad as the team can get?
Yeah.
And is Boston talent, you know, when you listen to sports radio, I never know. We're sort of, you know, this weird combination. We're willing to go to the bottom so we can go to the top again. We're not, are we? This is a town where everybody wants excellence every single year, no?
Well, it's changed. The landscape has changed because we've had a situation in the last 11 years where all four teams have won championships.
Right.
And it wasn't as if when the Celtics were bad back in the 90s, you know, the Rick Pitino thing and all that, we were going through a period back then when none of the four teams had won championships. Now they all have, and the competitive balance has changed, and the teams are fighting for ad dollars and seats.
We're talking with Steve Buckley, a sports columnist for the Boston Herald. Before we leave the Celtics, move on to the Bruins, because I know you were there at the last game when they lost, unfortunately. Is it Rondo that's a little – everybody I hear says, oh, it's because people can't get along with him and he's too difficult a guy. Is that what's going on here?
I think it's part of it. And, again, I still say it's about money.
Yeah.
And it always will be in Major League sports. Now, if you're asking on a separate level, and Jim could speak to this because he's a big Celtics fan, are you asking if Rajon Rondo made life difficult for Doc Rivers?
Yes, I am.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. He made life difficult for pretty much everybody in the team. He made life difficult for me.
He
just wasn't cooperative. Not that that's a factor. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. Doc Rivers didn't leave the Celtics because Rajon Rondo wasn't cooperative with the media. But
Does that mean he's surly? He wouldn't answer questions?
I'm answering questions. But it's stuff like, and I wasn't there that night, but the writers all talked about it, where everyone is assembled at Rajon Rondo's locker waiting for him. he'd keep you waiting 40 minutes, and then he walks out to his locker, stands there, and then turns around and walks back in the training room for 20 minutes and seemed to get quite a kick out of it.
Oh.
And things of that nature. Those are not the marks of a leader to me. Again, no one cares about the trivialities of a bunch of sports writers, but it does speak to a larger issue of how you treat the people around you. And I was not impressed the last couple of years in the manner in which he treated the people around him. Those, to me, are not the marks of a leader and a champion.
Colin, we only have a couple of minutes. Marjorie, you were at Game 6, the final of the Bruins game. So this is a classic story, and everybody makes up this story, but it's true in my case. I'm listening to the Bruins game on the radio. I fall asleep when they're up 2-1, and I'm thinking, God, it's going to be exciting. It's going to go
Game
7.
Way back music in the background.
Chicago. No, it is. No, I love listening to sports. That's what I grew up on, listening to Phillies on my little transistor radio. I wake up literally with about a minute and a half to go in the game. They're still up 2-1. And then in 17 seconds, was it 17 seconds?
17
two goals
something,
for Chicago,
yeah.
And the Stanley Cup is in Chicago. Some people are calling that a choke job. And is that a fair description of what happened
no,
the other night?
No, because, see, every team's choke is another team's great moment. And every team's great moment is another team's choke. Yeah. And I always tell people, read the coverage in both papers. Now, if you read it in Chicago,
okay.
What a gallant band of heroes and so forth and so on. And in Boston, some people say, boy, did they choke. The worst I can say about the Bruins is that they did have a time-honored tradition this past season, in the regular season, of not holding leads in the third period, of somehow, some way, letting down their guard, whatever that means, and allowing the other team to step in.
Now, let me ask you.
I thought it was a great season.
It was a great season.
You're going to leave the Bruins because I have one more Bruins question.
We'll make it quick because I want a Hernandez question.
Sorry, excuse me. Make it quick.
Yeah, make it quick.
So Bergeron, the star of the team,
yes.
is in the hospital with about 4,000 injuries.
Yes.
He's got a pierced lung. He's got a missing this. He's got a whatever. And then fans who know nothing about anything, I'm looking at myself as an example, say, why can't a baseball pitcher who's got a sore arm go out and throw a game when a hockey player, who frankly should be in the ER, played in the sixth game? Is that fair or is it not fair?
It actually is unfair, and I know a lot of people are talking like that. And I used to cover Al Leiter on the Yankees, mm-hmm. and Al Leiter had a pretty decent career, went close to 200 games, had a couple of good seasons. But his career with the Yankees ended because he couldn't throw a baseball because he couldn't get a blister to go away. And he tried pickle brine and seances and all kinds of things. And you couldn't grip the baseball. Now, if you put Al Leiter next to Patrice Bergeron's got a dislocated shoulder and a punctured lung and a broken kneecap. And he's out there playing in a broken rib. And he's out there playing. And Al Leiter can't play with a blister. The only problem with that is that throwing a baseball 94 miles an hour requires all five digits. And if you can't grip the baseball properly, you can't throw it and get the break that you need to be a successful major league pitcher.
Fine, I'm chastened. Fair enough.
Let me ask you one last thing about this Aaron Hernandez situation with the New England Patriots. I mean, there's been a lot of talk, you know, that there are some thuggy guys in the NFL, but this is really beyond the pale in a way that's just extraordinary. And we shouldn't draw any larger questions from the NFL about this or larger assumptions, or should we?
Well, I think you can draw some larger assumptions considering the 27, I believe, NFL players have been arrested this year alone. But I don't think it speaks to the NFL. I think it speaks to sports in general. And like I said at the beginning of this discussion, the only thing that's changed is, as Jim points out, free agency, but the amount of dollars being proffered to young athletes. And if you're in your 20s and all of a sudden you have millions of dollars. And I remember being in a Celtics locker room once, and a player was getting dressed, and like money was literally falling, and like hundreds of dollars, like a wad of like $5,100 bills, and they were like falling out of, and he was like shoving them into his locker. I'll get them later, and I make a decent living, but I don't have hundreds of dollars. There was an episode
of Did you try to grab a couple?
No, there was an episode of 30 Rock where one of the Tracy Morgan,
yeah. Morgan. Yes.
was lighting money on fire out in the street. And Tina Fey said, "Oh, Tracy's lighting money on fire again," like that kind of thing, making a joke out of the fact that some people have so much money they don't know what to do with it. And I think that that's part of the problem. I don't think that athletes in general are bad any more than any person in their 20s without responsibility, without maturity, is given boatloads of money without guidance. That could happen.
Should the Pats have signed him, do you think?
Well, in retrospect, no. I mean, it's an easy answer, but I didn't
even
have...
at the time, they knew he had a bad history, and other teams passed him by, and he went.
But I also think the teams have signed. I mean, Clay Buchholz was arrested for stealing computers when he was in high school.
He was?
And it was a dumb, stupid. I don't think he was the mastermind of the caper, but he was arrested for stealing computers from a junior high school. And and Clay Buchholz has done fine since then.
But we're not talking about my past. Thank you.
At the Wawa supermarket.
Okay, fine. In West Philadelphia. Steve Buckley from the Herald. It's great to see you as always.
You
thanks so much, Steve.
Thank you very much, Steve Buckley, for being here. Okay. Up next, it is coming up on the 4th of July. And in honor of the 4th of July, we're going to talk to Steve Reichlin, who is perhaps America's foremost grill guru, about the do's and don'ts of grilling on 4th of July. Listening to Boston Public Radio 89.7. WGBH.
I'm Liz Alessi, I live in Cambridge, and I report here. I've just always been a really curious person. A lot of the more interesting stories that I've found have been things that I just stumble upon because they're issues that I hear people talking about and asking questions about, and I have those questions
too. I really
too.
Think that if patients know better why they're taking their medications, they're more apt
My
to
job
take them.
Is to do the digging and find out more about that. Liz Alessi, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
We love our contributors. That means you. And Citizens Bank, presenting sponsor of the 2013 Boston Globe WGBH Summer Arts Weekend, July 26th, 27th, and 28th in Boston's Copley Square. You can learn more at bostonsummerarts.com. And Newbury Court, a full-service residential community for persons over the age of 62. Newbury Court in Concord, Massachusetts. You can schedule a visit any day of the week by visiting newburycourt.org.
I'm Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson. And I was asked if I was talking to a friend how I would convince them to support public radio. And I would say, you know all those times that you're flipping around the radio and you're tired of all those commercials and you land on this great show or this great piece of music or this great commentary and you go, ooh, I love that, and there are no commercials? That, my friend, is public radio. And I have been a long and avid supporter of public radio. I love it. It's my go-to station for This American Life, for wonderful music, for interesting commentary when I want to know what's going on in the world and I want to get all sides of the story. I hope that you will join me in supporting this fantastic outlet. Please show your support to Boston Public Radio with a gift in any amount, really any amount, by calling 888-897-9424 or you can give online at wgbhnews.org.
Yes, you can give online at wgbhnews.org or call 888-897-9424. How exciting. That was Yardley Smith.
I know. That was great.
You know, the voice of Lisa Simpson. You recognize that voice right away. And we interviewed her right here in studio, and she was fantastic. She also was a great shoe line as well. Anyway, however you choose to give and whatever you choose to give, it really does matter a lot. This is your last chance to support our show before the end of the drive and to support all the great work here at WGBH Radio. Listener support is vital to keeping these programs free and available every day. Joining Jim and me in the studio today is producer Andy Hicks. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Marjorie. Great to be here. Really excited. And yeah, that was Yardley Smith, who was actually standing right where you're standing in the studio.
Is that right?
Absolutely. This is when she came in to do the show.
She was great.
And she was fantastic on the show. We had her do the pledge spot out of the kindness of her own heart. Like, she didn't, you know, we could have paid her like thousands of dollars. She said, I just love public radio. I just want to do it.
That's great.
So that's her contribution. And we're asking you to make that contribution today as well. You know, when this drive began just a few days ago, Boston Public Radio was $200,000 away from ending the fiscal year on target. The public radio community stepped up and pitched in with whatever they could. They made gifts of $5 and $50 and $100, even $10,000. So now that amount with 3 days to go is just $67,000. That's pretty good. But here's the thing. Instead of one person covering that amount, although, John Henry, if you're out there, come on, pitch in. You're being asked to be one of the next 55 listeners to make a contribution before 2 p.m. Call 888-897-9424, or you can give online at WGBHnews.org.
Now, I get the best part of this. I get to thank some of the people who have contributed in the past 48 minutes. Jameson in Alston, thank you. Hillary in Winchendon. Robert in Roslindale. And what do you think John and Kate from Canterbury, New Hampshire, Marjorie said with their contribution?
What?
We love Jim and Marjorie.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you all. We really appreciate your contributions.
Support Boston Public Radio with a gift in any amount right now, and you will be entered, listen to this, to win a trip for two to Europe, personally planned for you by PBS travel guru Rick Steves. You pick the city, Rome, Paris, London, or Istanbul. How exotic is that? You spend 7 days exploring museums, enjoying fine cuisine, and making memories that will last a lifetime. And Rick will even call you at home to help you set up the trip, which really is a big deal to plan. Obviously, he knows all the ins and outs, the best places to go, how to get there, etc. So make that call right now. Possibly win a trip for two to Europe, 888-897-9424, or enter to win when you give online at WGBHnews.org.
It's such a great opportunity. Rick Steves, you know, I know Jim loves Rick Steves.
I really do.
His shows are fantastic on PBS, if you've ever seen him. And again, he'll plan out the trip for you, like Marjorie said. How about that gift of $100? Just $100 right now would do a lot for to keep this program going, to keep everything here on Boston Public Radio going. And we'll say thanks with a couple of tickets to the WGBH Craft Beer Festival. That's Saturday, July 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the WGBH Studios in Brighton. You know, Pretty Things Brewing Company is going to be there. Boston Beer Works, Slum Brew will be there. Smutty Nose. Bunch of all your favorite local brewers will be there, basically. Live music on the main stage. The best food trucks in town. And, of course, you'll be brewing up some more great programs by supporting Boston Public Radio. I'm sorry for that pun. Call 888. You said that before, Marjorie. I love it.
Sorry,
it's my fault.
888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org. Before the end of the day, we will get Jim to make that terrible pun.
I don't think that's happening, but that's a nice try. Here's the number, 888-897-9424. And again, online, WGBHnews.org. So to review, make a gift of support in any amount. You'll help keep the whole radio station free of on-air advertising all summer long. You'll be qualified to win a trip for two to Europe. You get that White Flower Farm gift certificate, and you'll help make sure we can cover the stories which matter to you and your community. And it's your last time to support the show during this drive. Andy thanks you. Marjorie does. I do. Everybody at GBH does. Please call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
New Hampshire's Smutty Nose Brewing Company is known for its Old Brown Dog Ale, which has prompted fans to send in hundreds of pictures of their own old brown dogs. Clearly, these folks love animals. Their beers are 100% vegetarian. And they're just one of the many local brewers you'll meet at WGBH's first annual Craft Beer Festival, Saturday, July 13th from 7 to 10 p.m. Sample local brews from the likes of Boston Beer Works, Slum Brew, Pretty Things, and more, while munching on tasty treats from some of the best food trucks in town and listening to some great live local bands on the main stage. Support Boston Public Radio with a gift of $100 and we'll say thanks with a pair of tickets. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. You know, as we approach what I assume is the biggest grilling day of the year, July 4th, we thought we would seek out the guru of the grill, the man behind the Barbecue Bible. In fact, that's his website, barbecuebible.com, and the star of public TV's Primal Grill. He also has a first novel called Island Apart. Welcome, Stephen Reichlin. How are you, Stephen?
I am doing great. How about you?
Excellent. Thanks.
Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. So, you know, summer has barely begun, but the fighting is already vicious for those of us who are in the market for a new grill. So you're the expert. Gas grill or charcoal grill?
Well, you know, I'd like to see everybody buy a charcoal grill, to be honest with you. Charcoal gives you a higher, drier heat, so it's better for searing meat. It's also very easy to smoke on a charcoal grill and difficult to smoke on a gas grill.
Really?
Yeah.
But everybody says the gas grills are so much easier. You just flip the switch.
Well, you know, that's kind of a big myth. Look, first of all, I own gas grills. I use gas grills. If that's what it's going to take to get you outside grilling, by all means buy a gas grill. But if you're asking what I recommend, charcoal, first of all, it gives you the pleasure of building and playing with fire.
Okay.
It's easier to smoke on a charcoal grill. And if you invest in a chimney starter, which is a vertical metal tube or box in which you light the charcoals, it really takes no more than 15 or 20 minutes to light the charcoal, which is about the same amount of time that it takes to preheat a gas grill.
Now, Stephen, you know what the similarity between a gas grill and elastic waist pants are? It proves you have given up, so I'm so with you. So on this chimney front, I'm so you preempted.
By the way, I should interject that we really should reframe the debate because gas is good, charcoal's better, but the ultimate fuel for grilling is wood.
Okay, well, that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about. So we've established we should have the little chimney thing.
Chimney starter
to avoid the lighter fluid, correct?
Chimney thing.
The chimney starter.
Well, also, not only to avoid the lighter fluid, but it gives you even ignition.
Okay.
You know, remember the old days you'd kind of light the coals and with lighter fluid, the coals in the periphery would be dead, the coals in the center
exactly.
would be lit. The whole thing would taste like lighter fluid. So.
Okay.
Trying to avoid that.
Okay, so you get the chimney started. Now, then you go to buy the materials. I assume that charcoal grills are just for yesterday's.
Well,
news.
You just said wood. So what? Let's get to the wood thing. What kind of wood are we talking
sure
about?
Charcoal, yeah. Charcoal's out. Charcoal's bad, right?
No. Listen, wood grilling, it's 2% of the population. It's for when you really, you climb to the top rung of the ladder of barbecue enlightenment. Let's stick with a charcoal kettle grill because so many people have them. They're widely available and they're inexpensive.
Okay.
I'll even give you a trick for grilling on wood on a charcoal grill.
What is it?
Are you ready?
Yes.
We're sort of ready, yes.
At a hardware store or grill shop, buy a bag of hardwood chunks, like oak chunks or hickory chunks. Light them in a chimney starter exactly as you would charcoal. Rake the glowing embers out in the bottom of your charcoal grill, and presto, you can be grilling over wood.
Thank God we can podcast this so I can get all the information and write
all
this down.
One other point I want to make, you alluded to charcoal.
Yeah.
Let's go for natural lump charcoal, not briquettes. Briquettes are a composite mixture made of coal dust, wood scraps, petroleum binders, borax, sometimes sand. Not that they're inherently bad, but unless you have them completely lit, glowing orange and ashed over, you may get a residual sort of acrid aroma that you won't get with natural lump charcoal.
You know, I'm a little disappointed in you, Stephen Reichlin. If you're really the primal grill man, shouldn't you be chopping down your own trees and then using that?
Well, one problem with that is if you chop your own trees down, you're working with green wood.
Yeah.
Green wood is okay in limited applications of cold smoking, but you wouldn't want to try to grill over green wood.
Okay.
It wouldn't give you a proper fire.
Okay, so July 4th is coming.
Busted.
What's that?
I said busted.
No. July 4th is coming. There are a lot of nervous grillers who want to push the envelope just a little bit. Tell us the thing that scares grillers a lot that is really quite simple that they can elevate to an art form on July 4th.
Well, I think two things. I mean, first of all, it's all about you controlling the fire, not the fire controlling you. Typical model guy throws meat on a grill with a raging fire and hopes and prays somehow that it will come out cooked to the degree of done he wants. So first of all, build a three-zone fire, that is coal thickly banked toward the back of your grill, thinly banked in the center, that's your respectively your searing zone and your cooking zone. Most important, leave a safety zone about 30% of the grill fire-free so that if you get a flare-up, if stuff starts to burn, if your grill is too hot, you can move the food to the safety zone, let the fire die down, and then start again. Rule number two that's very helpful, it's another 30% rule, and that is leave 30% of your food, your grill, food-free. Now, you know, that's the same guy who covers every square inch of his grill with chicken wings. And when he gets a fire, there's no room to maneuver. So leave at least a quarter to a third of your grill food-free. That way you have room to maneuver.
And what's the bold choice of what you should put on the grill that most people haven't done before that's actually a lot simpler than we'd like to think?
Well, I mean, one thing, grilling vegetables. You know, I think everybody is sort of, in our meat-centric culture, everybody's thinking steaks and burgers and chops. But there is no better way to cook most vegetables than on the grill. Case in point, corn on the cob.
Oh, yeah.
Grip the husk back, okay? It's important to grill the corn without the husk. Brush it with extra virgin olive oil or melted butter. Grill it over a screaming hot fire to caramelize the kernels. You basically, you turn the sugar into caramel. You will never taste better corn.
By the way, Marjorie is taking more notes than she has ever taken with any guest we've ever had, Stephen.
Right.
I want you to know.
Well, but here's the basic question, though, that we get to every time we discuss 4th of July or big grilling events, Stephen Reichlin. I want to ask you, in most 4th of July celebrations, in most families, it's the husbands or the boyfriends that are out on the porch manning the grill, and it's the little ladies that are inside doing the potato salad or whatever it is. Now, why is that?
Well, my wife would argue that probably because women are too smart to stand downwind of a smoky grill on a hot, sweaty day, getting smoke in their eyes.
Yeah.
But, in fact, your premise is not completely correct. If you travel Planet Barbecue, as I have many times, you'll find that there are vast swaths of the world where the primary grillers are women. One example is throughout Southeast Asia, another the Balkans, Serbia, Montenegro, and a third is even Mexico, where a lot of professional grilling is done by women.
But we are right about the United States, are we not? The grill is, better or worse, is a man's place, no?
It's changing. It's changing. I would say it's about, like everything else, the military. I would say that probably
Bless
about
you.
30% of the grilling events that will take place this week, July 4th weekend, will be done by women.
Okay,
wow.
Stephen, before we let you go, we have about a minute left. Your first novel is just out. It's called Island Apart. Give us the Cliff Notes version.
It is a foodie love story set here on Chappaquiddick Island in Martha's Vineyard. It involves a reclusive and mysterious hermit, a New York book editor, a disaffected, punked-out teenager, her biker boyfriend, and the real-life iconoclastic psychotherapist Wilhelm Reich. A lot of great food, not much barbecue, but plenty to make your mouth water.
How autobiographical is this thing?
Well, let's say that I do live in the middle of the woods on Chappaquiddick, but I am not a hermit.
Stephen Reichlin.
My wife would tell you she is certainly not the woman in the sex scene.
Well, aside from that, Stephen Reichlin, do you have recipes in Island Apart that I can enjoy?
You know what? There are no recipes per se in Island Apart, but if you go on my website, which is StephenReichlin.com,
yep.
That's R-A-I-C-H-L-E-N, you will find recipes of the dishes that were that inspired Island
Fantastic.
Apart.
Fantastic.
Hey, Stephen Reichlin, happy July 4th. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
To you all, it was great speaking with you. Happy holiday.
Thanks, Stephen.
So for the next few minutes, we're here to take all your grilling thoughts and tips. In return, what we ask is you tell us, what is it that has made grilling a virtually all-male sport in America for so long? 877-301-8970. I question Stephen's statistic. There's no 30% of women on July 4th who are doing that.
It's a small percentage.
There is and do you notice how many men shoo away
yes,
women?
It's
the 1950s?
Because
all
it's
over?
Like the caveman kind
it
of
is,
thing.
It is.
It's primal. It's fire. It's, you know, get in the house and make the cocktails or make the deviled eggs or whatever you
Can
make.
Can I make an admission to you that I really shouldn't
say? You're a grill master.
Speaking of primal, last July 4th, mm-hmm. I grilled with only a loincloth on just to get in the feeling. 877-301-8970. Is it all male grilling at your house come July 4th? If it is, why is it? And if it isn't, if you're one of the women who forced your way in, how'd you do it? How did you convince the man, the father, the lover, the brother, the grandfather, whoever it is, to step aside so you could do that? There is, I'm telling you, there's a real bias. And you know what's odd about it?
What?
I mean, men have become better cooks, real cooks kind of thing. But the notion, the
what
convention.
What do you mean men have become better cooks?
I mean, regular cooks. I don't mean grilling. I mean, then they used to be. Almost all the cooking used to be left to women.
Oh, okay.
Now there's a little bit more equality there. Yeah. But there's this. It is. There is still this notion, despite what Stephen said, that the grill is the exclusive province of the man.
Well, they can
in the
also
house.
Go outside. I mean, that's the other thing. Well, they'll go outside on the porch. The men will go out on the porch, and they'll all bring their beers, and they'll stand around the grill, and they'll discuss, you know, grilling techniques and so forth. And then there's something – it works out well, I think, for the women involved, because men feel differently about cleaning the grill than they do about cleaning the dishes. You know what I mean? So they can kind of take care of getting all the stuff left off the grill.
I actually like cleaning the grill.
Yeah, they clean the grill. They got the steel wool going. They get all their special utensils. You know, what do you buy for Father's Day? You buy grilling stuff for fathers. You get the different spices and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's a real – It's sort of a macho kind of thing to do, even if you're not a macho kind of guy.
You sort of
get some vicarious machismo by standing next to the grill, Jim.
877-301-8970. We only have a couple of minutes for this. I'm really dying to know what it is like at your house, at your workplace, wherever you're going on July 4th. And I haven't seen any hard statistics, and obviously Steve Reichlin knows a lot more about grilling than I do, since he is the sort of the guru of grilling, the primal grill guy. But I am telling you, I have never seen in 2013... I cannot think of one thing that is a regular part of our lives where there is more gender bias than there is at the grill. It's huge. And by the way, let me just go even further. Not only at virtually every event that I've ever gone to, I'm not only a horrible cook, I'm a horrible griller, but I'm talking about events that I go to. Uh-huh. Not only is the grilling done almost exclusively by the man, only men can participate in the discussion that you described that goes, am I right about that? That goes on about the grill. It's sort of like, it's almost like, what do the men do, Gogan? The wilderness things or whatever it is that some men do?
They went out in the wilderness.
Whatever they do.
Pounded drums.
Whatever they do.
That was sort of ridiculous.
But this is like an urban version of going out in the wilderness and pounding drums.
Did you go to the grill? Jim to go out in the woods and pound a drum?
Yes, I
like
have.
Like a bongo drum.
I actually have. I've had many, many.
March into the woods with your fellow men.
I have.
Pound away.
I have. I've done it many times. I grilled
By the way,
them. What?
I should point out that we didn't get to all the, there were some emails, and I apologize, I didn't get them in time, like asking questions to Stephen Reichlin about grilling that we didn't answer, like electric grills came from Jeff. But you can go to his website, which is
StephenReichlin.something.
Yeah, and the Barbecue Bible. He's got a great website, the Barbecue Bible.
Let's go to Scott. You're in Tipperton, Rhode Island. Am I right or am I right, Scott? Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes,
Hi,
you're
Scott.
On, Scott. Go.
My thoughts on the male-oriented grilling stems from a book that I'm reading now, Michael Pollard's Cooked book, about where he postures that the fire way to cook stems early back when the men would hunt an animal and bring it back, and it was a large celebration for the tribe or whatever. And,
exactly.
Sure,
and
cavemen.
And they stood around and made it into a public event. Rather than, you know, when it was just gathering berries, things like that.
I generally will go hunt a cow before July 4th every year so that I can get in the mood for. Scott, thank you for that contribution.
Well,
I think he's exactly right.
There's a whole ritual to it, too, right? The men are standing around the grill. Mm-hmm. Are they not?
They
just stand around. They watch the fire. They tell you when
we're
the
scratching ourselves. Yes.
When the fire is going to be ready for the steak that is being marinated upstairs. Or actually, the steak by then is down there. And they're waiting for that perfect moment so they can plop the steak on top of the grill. Let's go to Robert.
Not plop. It's place.
Eileen,
we don't
excuse
plop.
Me. Eileen in
Ellington,
Mass. Hi.
Is
that Eileen? Ellen. I'm sorry,
Where's
Ellen.
It, where's, do we get that? Where are you calling from in Massachusetts, Ellen?
Arlington.
Oh, Arlington.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Ellen. Go.
What's the deal
Hi,
in Arlington?
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm calling because I do all the grilling in my house.
No.
And I've been married over 30 years, and my husband grilled once and brought everything in the house, and everything was raw when we cut into it.
That's beautiful. So did he surrender did he surrender his position?
He did.
Or did you take his position?
I took his position, but he doesn't like to cook at all.
Really?
Yeah, he just doesn't like to cook at all. He lived in apartments for a while, and, you know, his meals consisted of grilled cheese and fried eggs, and that was it. So when we got married, he loved the fact that I like to cook. I've taken cooking classes, and he is not a griller. He'll help me. But as far as putting that food on the grill, he wouldn't even know where to start.
Hey, Ellen, has this been an emasculating experience for him, or has it not?
Not at all.
Well, good. I mean,
we go to friends' houses, and the husbands are grilling, and I think grilling's a macho thing for men.
It is.
And he's fine with it. He'll say, I'm a terrible cook, I can't grill, and that's it.
He's in touch with himself. Hey, Ellen, thank you for a great call. We appreciate it. Say hi to your husband, too. Let's go to Newport, Rhode Island, where Robert is on Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Hey, Robert.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Excellent.
Good.
good. I think you're missing the entire flip side of this equation. Imagine every woman in the house outside grilling and every guy in the house setting the potato salad up and setting up the chips. And imagine the mess that that would be inside. There's no
that's a good point.
Woman that is going to relinquish the power of setting up the you know the kitchen and the area. So the guys are just thrown outside, and then they bring in the meat. That's
then they bring in the meat. They're thrown outside, and they bring in the meat.
I like that.
Nicely put, Robert.
I like
Thank
that
you.
Image very
Let's
much.
Take one
that
more
was
if we
beautiful.
Can, please.
Susan in a sonnet. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm in Ellen from Arlington's camp.
Go.
I do. My husband doesn't get anywhere near the grill. He won't stand outside to keep me company because bugs will get at him. He stands inside and looks out the window, and when things look like they're done, he'll open the door for me, and I get back in.
That is a great image. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What?
He doesn't like to cook. When we first met, he made dinner for me. It was a large can of SpaghettiOs with 32 little meatballs.
Oh, God.
I love the little meatballs.
That was his idea of cooking.
Let me ask you, before you go away, though, is there anything better than one of the little meatballs in SpaghettiOs? I mean, tell the truth here, Susan.
Disgusting.
They're fabulous.
They
those little
disgusting.
Orange babies. You pop them in. Hey, Susan and Ellen and all of you, thank you so much
hold
for
on,
the call.
Hold on. Before we move on here.
Yeah, what is it?
Keith says what he does is he grills the corn and brushes it with butter and then sprinkles it with fresh grated Parmesan cheese. How good does that sound?
Sounds fabulous.
Yeah, it sounds fabulous.
Corn on the grill, by the way, as Stephen Reichlin said to us, is about as good as it gets.
It's about as good as it gets. Okay, that's it for grilling. Up next, it is Emily Rooney with another edition of the world-famous Emily's List. You are listening to Boston Public Radio 89.7 WGBH.
This summer, there's one place where Afropop meets Spanish bagpipe meets Celtic reels.
The Boston Summer Arts Weekend, After Dark. Friday night, July 26th.
New Orleans legend Dr. John.
Then on Saturday, the 27th,
Angelique Kidjo.
Presented by Citizens Bank.
Check out the entire lineup and reserve your spot now at bostonsummerarts.com.
Funding for our programs comes from you and the law firm of Wolf Greenfield. Specializing in intellectual property law, Wolf Greenfield provides clients with solutions on patents, trademarks, licensing, and litigation. WolfGreenfield.com. And Ferguson Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery, featuring the latest for your kitchen and bath, including KitchenAid appliances offering designs to complement all lifestyles. Locations at Ferguson.com.
Boston Public Radio takes you to the scene of breaking news. We observe what's happening and we keep you informed.
Reporter Ann Mostu.
I'm also following the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombings on the local level. A huge part of my time, travel, and recording equipment is paid for with listener support. Listener support makes this possible.
WGBH takes you there. Be a part of the journey. Here's how.
So pitch in online at WGBHnews.org, or here's the phone number, 888-897-9424. We've told you it's your last chance to support this program before June 30th. That's the end of the fiscal year here at WGBH. At the start of this campaign, the station needed to raise $200,000. Here's our colleague Andy Hicks with an update, Andy.
All right. So there are just 3 days left in this Boston Public Radio's June fundraising campaign, Jim and Marjorie. We started the week with $200,000 to raise. And today, thanks to thousands of listeners across New England, there's just $66,000 left. That's remarkable. It also means we're not quite there yet. So if you could do your part today with that gift of $100, $200, or $1,000, whatever you can, it covers the programs you love. It pays for the news you need. It might ensure a fundraiser-free summer here on Boston Public Radio and on 89.7, the whole station. And hey, you know what? Let's hear from 38 more people on the phones or online if we can. We started out needing to hear from 60. We've had a few call-ins so far. Thank you so much if you have. If you haven't, the number is 888 888- 800-897-9424, or you can always give online at WGBHnews.org.
You know, not long ago, Boston lost its longest-running weekly newspaper, the Boston Phoenix, making it harder than ever to find real journalism and real independent voices. But public radio keeps growing thanks to individual support. NPR has added news bureaus around the world. Boston Public Radio with Jim and me. We hope we're bringing you the issues you really care about and want to hear about every day, while Innovation Hub and Under the Radar cover stories you will not hear anywhere else.
So summer means beach days, barbecues, vacations. It also obviously means heat waves, mosquitoes, Cape traffic. Public radio means inspiring stories and fresh perspectives. It also means sometimes your favorite public radio station has to ask for your support. That's what's happening now. Trust me, Boston Public Radio would not be fundraising in this heat if it weren't absolutely necessary, but it is. Boston Public Radio is less than $200,000 away from successfully closing the books on June 30th. If that happens, the station can go back to more what you love and we love, not a single day of fundraising until the fall. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
And again, you know, a lot of people heading out for the 4th of July weekend earlier, probably leaving town. Before you leave town, before you forget about it, make that contribution. You're supporting so many things. You're helping to keep Jim and Marjorie here every day at noon. By the way, if you give online, it's real easy. It takes just a couple minutes, and you can leave your comment online and say why you gave. Here's something from Masha in Newton. She says, I love both of our NPR stations and support them both, but I so love hearing Jim, his sharp wit and open-mindedness. Jim, you have a sharp wit and you're open-minded.
I couldn't agree more with whoever that was. Thank you kindly for that tribute. I appreciate it. She thinks you're fine, too, Marjorie. I spoke to her a few minutes ago.
I'm crushed. Okay.
But who I really love is Marjorie, and she says.
Okay.
Sorry.
Anyway, we are obviously on a mission this week to raise the last $200,000 necessary to cover the expenses before the end of this month, which is almost over. That's why WGBH needs you to take part. Maybe you're a longtime supporter. You could give a little bit more. Maybe you've never supported public radio before, but you're thinking about it. Well, please do it now. Public radio takes you on a journey, and in order to cover the next stint of that journey, Boston Public Radio really needs you. Help us hit that $200,000 mark, and this station goes fundraiser free for the rest of the summer. Call 888-897-9424 or give securely online at WGBHnews.org.
I'm Rick Steves.
Merci beaucoup.
For 30 years now, my Rick Steves tours have taken thousands of people to my favorite spots all across Europe. And now I'd like to do the same for you. Make a contribution to WGBH right now, and you'll be entered to win a 7-day tour for two to your choice of Rome, Paris, London, or Istanbul. Enter by calling 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org. And I hope you make a gift to support Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. She joins us every Friday on Open Mic, host of Greater Boston, which morphs into Beat the Press on Fridays. The woman behind the real Emily's List, of course, would be Emily Rooney. Hi there, Emily.
Hey, Marjorie. Hey, Jim.
So, big news this morning. Martha Coakley may be running for governor.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I like that idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a ton of people that have already thrown their hat in the ring, kind of unofficially, but she would be a formidable contender on the Democratic side. I mean, you've got Stephen Grossman, you've got this guy Donald Berwick, you got this guy Joe Avalon.
I'm not really familiar with him. What is he?
He's in. I don't know, he's some kind of a money guy.
Okay. Berwick, for those who don't know, ran Medicare and Medicaid for Barack Obama, so he's not nothing. But he's not. They don't have the profile of Coakley.
So it could be the two constitutional officers going at each other.
Yeah.
Steve Grossman and Martha Coakley.
Well, Martha Coakley could be running against Charlie Baker. For the Republican. That could be
Hey, Martha Coakley could be running against Scott Brown, part two.
I mean,
well,
listen,
that's true.
This is a great story in a way, though. Talk about a rehabilitation tour. I mean, she was devastated. I mean, she told me flat out, you know, she cried. It was awful. I mean, she was widely anticipated to win
that special election
against Scott Brown. And it all just unraveled in the last 10 days or so of 20.
And she's ridiculed on SNL, not to mention the fact that in every story about a Senate campaign in Massachusetts to this day.
Jonathan Alter wrote that book, and then he mentioned the fact that she went on that vacation, which turned out to be not true. Mm-hmm. That was one of those exaggerated things, that she had gone on vacation over Christmas. But it all got out there, all this stuff about her. And she's proven herself to be a very popular person.
Well,
in,
I think
in
she
state.
Handled that with incredible class.
She did.
And grace, and she's a really smart woman. She's done a great job as Attorney General. I mean, I was a big fan of hers when she ran against Scott Brown, and I was too was stunned. Don't forget, she won the primary by 20 points, and she beat Michael Capuano.
She still has what I would call kind of the Dan Conley problem. She behaves like a cop. You know, she's
Emily, this happens every time
every
a prosecutor runs.
Yeah.
I know.
Scott Harshbarger
he was
ran
a cop.
Former Middlesex County DA, former Attorney General.
Tom Riley.
Couldn't do it. Tom Riley, exact same thing.
Because they're so studied. They don't let their personalities come
through. And she's a lot of personality. She used to dance in the studio.
Would you?
Remember?
Two things. One, how many times have you asked Martha Coakley in the last 2 years if she's going to run for governor? In my case, I probably asked her 25
times. You probably asked her
and
she a few more times than me.
All 25 times she has said as emphatically as anybody, never, not happening.
Yeah, I mean, I know. People are entitled to change their
mind. I'm fine. Barack Obama told Tim Russert he wasn't running, and then he did. But let me tell you, I want to just fill in the blanks on your story about Tom Riley. We used to do a Saturday radio show.
Yes.
We did a show. Tom Riley was with us for an hour when he was running for governor. During the break, he tells the most moving story of a trial that he prosecuted.
That I watched him prosecute. I sat there every day. It was a horrible case where this lunatic kid killed a mother, a pregnant mother, and two kids in Townsend. It was one of the most
horrible. Oh, I remember that. The Townsend.
So in any case,
we asked him
Danny,
about it.
What was his name?
I forget.
Whatever it is. We asked him about it during the break. We're just three of us talking. And it was so moving and so personal and so powerful. We come back from a commercial. We say, Attorney General, you're just telling us about whatever the case is. Tell the listeners about it. It was literally as if, you know, it was a different human being. It's almost as if these prosecutors feel that there's
disease.
A line that they can't cross when they're running for office, which is so strange. In any case, so Coakley, I think it'd be good for Massachusetts. It's good for democracy.
You think Steve Grossman and Martha would run against each other?
I do. I think Grossman's wanted to be governor for a long time. And by the way, don't sell Steve. Yeah, but Steve Grossman, let me tell you, he has really worked the grassroots in the state as well as anybody I've seen. He's a really decent guy. I think it'd be a great race. I love it.
I think it'd be tough, though, because I think every woman that supported her the last time around is going to feel there's so few women, except for now we have
a lot of women bailed on her.
A lot of women did bail on her for Scott.
Yeah.
Everybody was in love with
Scott.
Wonder
what that was about.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't as bad as the men. The men were more in love with him
than
the women.
Let's not do this again, Margaret.
Including
okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yours truly.
Next.
Over there.
Bromance.
It was really nauseating, Emily, if you only knew the half of it.
Okay, so, from the upbeat road.
I've heard it from Scott, too.
What's
that? He confirmed it.
He did?
I was at a social function with Scott a few weeks ago.
And he
confirmed what?
That he has a bromance with you.
Oh, yeah.
He did.
Jim.
This is the best day
little,
of my life.
Little, in his staff.
Okay, can we move on from this? Can we discuss something much more serious?
Jim
in the newsroom,
and Scott,
like everywhere else.
Sitting in a tree.
This is pathetic. Okay, pause. Now, here we go. Everybody in the newsroom and on the air and in the world and in the water cooler, everybody's talking about Aaron Hernandez. What are the couple of things that come into your head first when you're thinking about him, Emily Rooney?
Tattoos.
Tattoos is being telling in the case or just the body?
I mean, the whole thing about the tattoos. And then I started studying them because there's a couple other pictures in the paper today.
Harold had great pictures.
Yeah,
the front page of the Harold.
The cards.
It was great. And also,
a deck of cards?
I'm born to play this game, ringing around his collarbones.
Are
and
there
then,
any gang significances in there?
I don't know. But
well, the gang significance is on his hand where it says blood.
Yeah.
And they say that is connected to a gang, potentially connected to a gang from his former hometown in Connecticut. So they say, apparently, there may be clues, potential evidence on his body.
The thing that is so startling is it just really plays out like every other murder. Frankly, in Dorchester, it's like he's just kind of one of them, and nobody knew.
Well, you know what's all?
Did you see this? Excuse me.
What's that?
Mind on my money. He had that tattooed across the middle of his chest.
This is on the front page of the Herald, yeah.
This is inside, actually, with all these dollar signs underneath it. I mean, how weird is that?
Can I say, this is a subject that one has to be careful about because I think all three of us respect how hard the police work, law enforcement people. A friend of Marjorie and mine emailed us this morning talking about assuming if Hernandez has a responsibility for these two murders in 2012 that he's now being investigated about, if Tamerlan Tsarnaev killed the three people in Waltham, the unsolved thing from the 10th anniversary of 9/11, she said, and she's not an unkind person, she meant this with dark humor. It's almost like you get a starter murder in Massachusetts. I mean, if in fact they're responsible for, think about it, for these things. Odin Lloyd, I know this is a big leap. Mm. Odin Lloyd is dead and wouldn't have to be. And I would guess much more significantly because of the mass of the carnage and death. I mean, 4 people wouldn't be dead and 260 people injured incredibly
seriously.
If they're
figuring out now that Aaron Hernandez was in that club, Clue or whatever this name of it was, last summer in July and was with them, the 2 people got killed. How come they didn't figure it out then?
Exactly.
Why is this so hard? And you know what you wonder about, too? They were upstanding people from what at least I read in the paper this morning. One had been a former cop in his native country.
I mean, the 2 people who were killed
came from the Dominican Republic. Yeah. The other guy, there was no like gang affiliation as far as this morning's papers were reporting anyway. And then they just blew him away.
Yeah, a year goes by and nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. I agree. And by the way, you can make the same case. I would think you can make the same case in the Waltham murder. Looking back, where have they been until all of a sudden this alleged Tonyshev connection? So we hear. In any case, quick quiz. Slate did a wonderful thing. Slate compared Tamerlan Tsarnaev and Aaron Hernandez. When you first see it, you say, what? And then what they do is they list 10 quotes. These are actual quotes which refer to either the Patriots tight end or the former amateur
quotes
boxer.
From who?
Obviously, from – doesn't matter. About them.
Okay,
they're real quotes.
Yes.
We're going to read you a couple.
They're hard. He picked out the hardest ones.
We want you to tell us whether this one is about Tsarnaev or about Hernandez. I'll do the first one. He would rebel. It was very, very hard, and he was very, very angry. He wasn't the same kid the way he spoke to me. Who is that about, Tsarnaev or Hernandez?
Hernandez.
That would be
very
correct.
Good.
Very good.
Very good.
Next, Marjorie.
Okay,
have one?
This is a hard one, too.
Why is that? I mean, I'm just guessing here.
You just got it. Well, because Jim wanted to humiliate you. That's why we're doing this.
It's not over yet. Let's see how it goes.
Self-esteem is quite low, not well-adjusted emotionally, not happy, moods unpredictable, not stable, doesn't take much to set him off, but not an especially jumpy guy.
Who's that?
Hernandez.
Very good.
Wait a second. This is not right. Okay, here's another one.
What's not right?
That you're getting all these.
Has to be him.
He's a machine. A clean, clear technique, knows what he needs to do and just does it. This is a really hard one.
Tsarnaev.
Forget this. Okay, fine.
Very good,
Emily. You destroyed the whole quiz.
I thought you had more.
No, we did, but you're getting all right, which destroys the whole thing. Here it is, the reason you tune in every Friday at roughly 1 o'clock.
Okay, I'm not getting enough credit
for that. Here it is, Emily's list. That's all the credit you're getting.
She got a perfect score on the quiz.
It's out of control. How about common sense? Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy. It's your right. Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
I love that sound. That's all I can say.
Here it is. You picked it.
Emily takes over the show. Take it away. Emily's list.
Well, first of all,
yes.
This is the sweet side of Emily. Did you all see full page advertisement in the Boston Globe today from Rocky Worth? Rocky Worth is the owner of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yes. I didn't know what you're
talking
about. That
actually brought a tear to my eye.
Tell Marjorie what this is.
So
I didn't
it's a tribute
really
to Boston.
See it.
Dear Boston. And he talked about what a classy town we were, how welcome, I don't even know if it was true, how welcoming to the Chicagoans, to both their team and to people who came here to play. And he put it in context of what a tough spring we've had and how strong Boston is and how strong the Bruins were and how much, you know, everybody rallied around them in a time when it was important for everybody to come together. It was a lovely, heartwarming, dignified, classy. And I have to say, it really brought a little tear to my eye.
No,
I had to go look him up. Who is Rocky Worth? Love that name, though.
Is he the owner
of else could? You have to have a name like that in order to own
it. Is he the owner of the Blackhawks?
Yeah, he owns it.
Now, let me say, I don't mean this to disrespect you, Emily. I'm very fond of you. But in light of the fact that it was soft and emotional, obviously you had nothing to do with choosing that. Is that a safe assumption?
Exactly.
Okay, what's the second
thing? That was my first one.
I knew it
now
was.
We're on to things that really annoy me.
Go ahead.
All right. Obesity as a disease. Obesity is, by the way, I've lost the argument on alcoholism, and I feel the same way. It's all about money. You know, you classify something as a disease, and it's a way to make money because insurance kicks in and all these drugs kick in that you can put in for. Same with alcoholism. And then, you know, you can put in your insurance to go to the...
Why is obesity not a disease?
Because it's something that you have complete control over.
Well, you don't always have complete control over.
You do alcoholism.
No, wait a second. But one of the no, you don't. Addiction.
You don't have to drink.
There are food addictions and there are why are you making a face, Marjorie? Alcohol addictions.
She's with me on this, aren't you? Come on, Marjorie.
I think it's not a disease. Usually it has to do
with
eating too much.
It's a social problem, but it's not a disease.
Yes, of course it has something, except in certain medical conditions, it has something to do with eating too much. But sometimes people can't control their eating.
Some people have some kind of disorder, but that doesn't mean obesity in general
is a disease.
Are you writing a rebuttal to the American Medical Association or
it's,
whatever
it's
it is?
It's about money.
Okay, but you know what this is about, with all due respect about you? Marjorie has never been overweight other than when she swallowed the yeast when she was working at the ashram.
Exploded in
Palo Alto. It's a long story. It's a sad story.
Awful.
You've never been overweight in your whole life, Emily Rooney?
Yeah.
Not really, right?
Well,
you're saying,
not grossly.
Well, I mean, I'm saying, and most of us have been overweight from time to time. If you're part of the 2/3 of Americans who are or have been overweight, you get it.
But if I get overweight, I know what to do about it.
What is that?
Diet.
Okay,
don't eat.
Okay, next.
All right, here we go.
This
annoyed me. I don't know why.
Shocking.
Babson College apologizing to Brandeis over a 37-year-old incident that had to do with swastikas. And it was a stupid thing. And by the way, at the time, Babson University did send an apology to Brandeis.
Why are they apologizing now?
Oh, well, it should have come directly from the president of the institution. I hate all that stuff, you know, apologizing for something you had nothing to do with. It's so gratuitous.
Is Babson the place that Carrie Healy is now ahead of? Yeah.
Yeah.
So Carrie Healy was apologizing?
Carrie Healy had nothing to do with it. I know, but she wasn't.
So what's the genesis of this then?
Oh, they thought the time had come and the proper healing had. It's exactly. I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
proper healing. That's one of those overused
What it did
terms.
Was it opened up a 37-year-old scab that didn't need to be. Who even knew about it?
I'm against you.
I didn't know about it.
I want to take this opportunity to apologize for what I said to Marjorie about Emily 20 years ago before I met her.
It's outrageous.
I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to do it.
All right.
What else?
Obesity. The cigarette tax. This is like the panacea for everything.
I'm with you.
Another dollar for packs of cigarettes. This is the solution that our great government
comes up. To fix the roads and bridges in Massachusetts.
So only smokers have to pay for it?
Well, first of all, only 17% of people are still smoking. That's
number
one.
Yeah, you know who a lot of
number
them
two,
are? The people that are trying
smoking
to quit
drinking. Smoking is a disease.
The
don't
people
you think,
that are
Jim?
Trying to
yes,
quit
I do.
Smoking is a disease.
I do, yeah, I do.
Now, drinking.
It's an addiction.
Excuse me.
It is an addiction.
Can I ask you a question? If someone smokes a cigarette in Massachusetts, who generally pays for the consequences of that smoking? Those of us who don't smoke. Is that a safe assumption?
No, I don't
mean secondhand smoke.
No.
I mean the healthcare costs. No. Of course we do.
No, you can say that about people who overeat, too.
Obesity has left smoking in the dust.
In the dust.
It's not in the dust.
Cost.
They're two of them. They're roughly tied as the most serious.
Smoking is heart disease.
Yeah, would you support? They also increase the gas tax 3 cents. How do you feel about that?
That's fine. That affects everybody who drives.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Oh, so your view is it should be a broad based thing if they're doing that.
Everybody takes on the smokers like they're lepers.
Exactly. A lot of them are underprivileged.
All the data shows.
All the data
shows that if you were if you're a young kid and you raise the cigarette tax, you know what happens? You make cigarettes unaffordable for young kids. If
That's
they don't
bull.
Smoke when they're young, they don't smoke
They'll
when they're
They'll just
adults.
Get more money and, you know. Buy
are you done or not?
They throw in a lottery ticket just to make sure that the poor people want to have something else to waste
okay,
their money on.
What's the last one?
All right. Andrus Nelson's. We got to think of a better name for this guy.
It's hard to say. It's a real problem.
This is a bad
name. It's like Johns Hopkins.
Andrus Nelson.
I saw him interviewed. It was on your show. On your show, I saw it.
So what do we do about this? Are you upset?
Like, how about Andre Nelson? It's just not going to work.
This
Andres
is unbelievable.
Nelson's.
How can you just be reacting to this like this, Marjorie?
Andrus Nelson.
She is unhappy with the
with
name
says.
Of the God-given name of Andrus Nelson.
It's impossible. It's
I know, but it's not his fault,
Lots of
Emily.
People have stage names.
Exactly.
He's going to be standing on the stage for most of his career.
I'm trying to help him out here. Andre.
What does he appear to be like, by the way? I didn't see the interview.
Lovely guy.
Does he
lovely
appear
guy.
Lovely
yes.
Guy.
I mean, unbelievably talented, young, got a little tiny baby, and they're all going to be young and healthy and bopping about town.
All right.
One more.
Okay, quickly, please.
State Senator Wendy Davis from Texas. She's my new heroine.
Oh,
I
we
love
all
her.
Agree.
I love her. 11
the
hours in the
hour.
Pink sneakers. She has become such a heroine, and I love
great.
The fact that she just has gotten national attention
great
over
outfit,
this.
Too.
Great outfit, and hundreds and hundreds of women cheering her on. I think it was a great warning sign for
the
GOP.
That nutty Rick Perry is going
to
overpower her in the next.
She also gives great interviews. You see her on Anderson Cooper the other night? She was fabulous.
Yeah,
she is really
very
grounded
smart.
And
she
smart
herself
and
is a teenage mother.
All right, I'm not going to be here next Friday.
You're not?
Have you kicked
Emily.
Me out?
Oh, God, then I won't show up either.
Oh, okay.
Can I tell
so
you something? I just want to, can I review for 1 second? Emily, in one segment on Emily's List, said wonderful things about a politician, Wendy Davis, and said wonderful things about a Chicago. You have never done anything like that before on our show.
Well, call Ripley's.
She is my heroine, though. I absolutely love her. I'm with you. I saw her standing there, and they came, and they put the back brace on her because she's been standing up for 11 hours, and they said, oh, you can't have a back brace. Loved her.
They're Happy all, July 4th.
They're not always complaints. Come on, Jim.
No, they're not always.
Observations.
Yes,
all right,
they are.
Bye, you guys.
Emily,
it's
great to see you. Have a great 4th.
Thank
we'll see you
very
soon.
Much. Emily's going to be on tonight on the
Beat
you're
going to be on, too.
Yes, and so am I. Emily and I will both be on Beat the Press tonight at 7 o'clock on WGBH. Okay, when we come back, it's a battle of the bands on our Friday news quiz. Concert promoter Joyce Lenihan faces off against photographer Peter Simon. That's coming up on Boston Public Radio 89.7 WGBH.
Four years ago, when President Obama made a brief trip to Ghana, he got personal.
I have the blood of Africa within me.
Now he's making the longest trip to Africa of his presidency. We'll talk about that and other news on that dynamic continent. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
WGBH programs exist because of you. And Tanglewood, five-time Grammy Award winner jazz trumpeter Terrence Blanchard performs with his group tonight. More information at 888-266-1200 or tanglewood.org. And the Joan and James Vernon Cancer Center at Newton Wellesley Hospital, striving to provide patients with expert cancer care, innovative services, and treatment options. Information at nwh.org/cancer.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves. I hope you've been able to join me in my travels through Europe on public television. From bustling cities to quiet corners rarely visited by tourists, we've discovered spectacular places and brought them to you on Rick Steves Europe. Years ago, I started designing tours for small groups packed with vivid experiences and led by hand-picked guides from each European location to help travelers make the very most of their trips. Now, I'd like to offer you the chance to win one of these tours for two. And the best part is, you choose where you'd like to visit for 7 days. Rome, Paris, London, or Istanbul. You'll fly from Boston and choose from more than 100 departure dates. But the only way you have a chance to win is if you call or visit the website now. Here's how to enter to win the trip of your dreams from Rick Steves Tours.
You call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org. Fewer than 3 days left and still a ways to go before Boston Public Radio can call its June fundraising campaign a success. If you've done your part already, thank you very, very much. If not, this is a great time to do it. Joining Jim and me in the studio with more is Drew Dawson. Hi, Drew.
Hey there. Thank you. And this Monday, WGBH had $200,000 to raise before the end of the month. Thanks to thousands of listeners pitching in with contributions anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 and beyond, that amount is down now to $65,000. Remember, it's not about one person giving that much. It's about a whole community of listeners doing what they can. That's why right now you're being asked to be one of the next 14 listeners on the phone lines before 2 o'clock, before the end of the show today. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
Now, for those of you for whom the hot weather is too much, we wish we could say that supporting Boston Public Radio would cause the temperature to drop a couple of degrees. But that's not the case. But here is a cool idea for you. Help Boston Public Radio break 200 grand by midnight on June 30th, and the station goes fundraiser free all summer long. More of what you love about public radio, less of the fundraising you can do without. That is refreshing, no? Plus, you'll be automatically entered to win that trip for two to Europe, courtesy of the great Rick Steves Travel. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
Think of how many times you've caught yourself saying, I heard this story on NPR. Because stories told on public radio have staying power. They're what you talk about with your friends and family. During these on-air campaigns, you're often asked to consider how much you listen, but please also consider why you listen. NPR is radio at its best because it's paid for by the people who value it most. Please call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
And when you support Boston Public Radio with a $100 gift of support right now, WGBH will say thanks with two tickets to the WGBH Craft Beer Festival. It's coming up on Saturday the 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. right here at the WGBH Studios in Brighton. Attendees will get to sample all kinds of brews from the likes of Boston Beer Works, Slum Brew, Pretty Things, and many more. Plus, live music on the main stage. stage, presentations from some of Boston's best brewmasters and some of the best food trucks in town. Plus, you'll be brewing up more great programs by supporting Boston Public Radio. So call right now, 888-897-9424, or give online at wgbhnews.org.
Coming up in a minute, the Friday News Quiz with Joyce Linehan and Peter Simon in studio. You won't want to miss a second of it, but it only takes a second to help make this show and all these other shows possible. As we said, the drive ends in 3 days. This is your last chance to support this program. Show your support. Keep Drew, Marjorie, me, and all of our great colleagues employed. Call 888-897-9424 or simply give online at wgbhnews.org.
Somerville's Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project consider themselves an idea, not a brewery. In fact, they don't even have a brewery to call home. And while they have a sum total of 4 employees, their dedication to good time artisanal beers has made them local legends at taps and taverns all over town. And they're just one of the many local brewers you'll meet at WGBH's first annual craft beer festival, Saturday, July 13th from 7 to 10 p.m. Sample local brews from the likes of Harpoon, Boston Beer Works, Slum Brew, Smutty Nose, and more, while munching on tasty treats from some of the best food trucks in town and listening to some great live local bands on the main stage. Support Boston Public Radio with a gift of $100 and we'll say thanks with a pair of tickets. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. It is time for the Friday News Quiz. Here with us to tackle trivia from this week's news are Joyce Linehan. She's an arts publicist, political activist, music industry veteran and discoverer, a mover with First Night, which we hope has not seen its last night, and a Dorchester native. How are you, Joyce?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Great to see you. And then, in the other corner, internationally renowned photojournalist celebrating his 50th year in the industry. And to mark this milestone, Peter's putting out a new DVD, Through the Lens, celebrating 50 years of personalized photojournalism. To see a preview of the project, which I did this morning, and it is fabulous, go to his website, petersimon.com, and you can donate to his Kickstarter campaign to help fund the project. Peter, it is great to see you.
Thanks for inviting me on, Jim. You know I'm a huge fan of both of you.
Thank you very much.
That's the only reason you're back, by the way. It's not your skills.
I have your calendar on my my refrigerator. Well, I have it next to my refrigerator. Actually, it's absolutely gorgeous. All those great scents of Martha's Vineyard. You brought us a new one from 2014. And Joyce Linehan, before we begin, I knew that you had managed the Lemonheads. I knew about that. I did not know that Elizabeth Warren's, who is our United States senior senator now, her campaign was basically hatched in your kitchen?
It was. A scheme was hatched in my living room, actually, in Dorchester.
Do tell.
It was the very first house party that you did when she was starting to go out and listen to people about whether or not she was going to run. And I got a call on a Sunday morning at 9 a.m. to see if I could put together a house party in 36 hours and managed to get about 70 people there and about 100 others who were very angry with me because they couldn't rearrange their schedules to be there. And it was really something.
By the way, that morning, Scott Brown called us looking for your address, but he could not get it. Now, Peter, I want to say one more thing about you before we start, and I don't want to fawn all over you. My two favorite photo books of all time. Yes. One is Bernice Abbott, who's the brilliant photographer and what she did about New York City decades ago. Your thing, what's it called? I and EYE?
Correct.
Which is the story of a generation, is one of the most beautiful books, both writing and photographs I've ever seen in my life.
Thank you, Jim. To put me on the level of Bernice Abbott is like I'm shrinking down below.
No, you're unbelievable. Well, by the way, it's not just the Led Zeppelins and the Grateful Dead. I mean, your photographs of real people in life and serious moments like marches on Washington, it's surreal.
Well, not only that, the whole way you captured that whole 60s, 70s time frame, you know, when we were all very idealistic. I don't know what happened to that, but anyway.
We haven't changed, some of us, Marjorie.
Yeah, okay. We're still hanging in there.
Okay, good.
So should we start?
Yes.
Joyce gets the first question from Marjorie Egan.
Okay, you ready, Joyce?
I am.
Who's this person who wanted to battle with the modern lovers when he was on Boston Public Radio a few weeks ago?
You know, we're ready to really get down and go to battle with the modern lovers.
Absolutely.
We think we'll absolutely destroy them.
I heard that, actually. It was Tom Hamilton.
Very
the
good.
The bass player for Aerosmith. That's
right.
Is correct.
And I tweeted at him if he needed a publicist, I was available. But we had to talk first.
Now, what is the deal? The whole thing, we've discussed some of the sponsors. It's the it's Roadrunner versus Dream On is the official rock song of Masters. Where does that stand?
It's not versus. There are two separate bills, both in committee, I believe. I know that ours is in committee, and we're trying to get it voted out of committee. The sponsor of the bill has been a little bit... distracted these days, but he promises me that he will get it done this
Who's
year.
Who's the sponsor of the bill?
Representative Marty Walsh.
Oh, right.
He's running.
That's a very good point. Now,
do you have a candidate in the race?
I do.
Who is it?
It would be Representative Marty Walsh.
Okay.
Well, he's going to do
right by your
salon. It's the least I can do, right?
Yeah.
He's been in her kitchen for weeks waiting for a house party. Now, Peter, are you ready or not?
I have to say to both of you that I love your program. I listen to GBH all the time.
But
I don't follow the news like that much. So if I come if I come across as an idiot, please forgive me.
Let me just say you're in huge trouble, Peter Simon. Here he comes.
Okay.
A remarkable feat of public speaking happened this week in Texas. Please listen.
As we began to debate this bill on the Senate floor last week, we talked about the fact that we were here because we had taken extraordinary measures to be here. And I want to talk about that for a moment.
And Peter, that moment lasted for 13 hours. Who is this woman? You don't need to know her name, but what was she doing that made news, you know?
She was trying to keep the bill from being passed that would restrict abortions in the state of Texas.
You are correct, Peter Simon. You can breathe again, Peter.
It was Wendy. Wendy Davis.
Wendy Davis. Yes.
See, I'm learning.
Now, before we go ahead, I know you hate these kind of questions. Of all of the rock performers and bands, from your sister to the dead, which of the photographs you think really captured the essence of you?
Okay, I'd have to bring it down to two. Jerry Garcia, with whom I developed a very personal relationship.
Oh, you
did? Yeah, I just adored him, and he thought I was the left wing of all the photographers, which many felt comfortable around me, because I didn't make them getting crazy poses. And the other one was Bob Marley, both of whom are dead, unfortunately. And, once again, just idolized him, thought he revolutionized music, and I shared a joint with him. So that was about as far as it goes.
Is it weird taking pictures of your siblings and your relatives? Because you've done a lot of that. Is that a strange thing? Is that hard?
It's getting harder as these people age. As we were younger and more beautiful, it was easy. now there's more vanity involved, so it's a little harder. But it was great growing up. I mean, you mentioned Carly. She was the most gorgeous young adult that I could imagine. It was wonderful photographing.
I've seen pictures of you when you were young. You're pretty hot yourself, Peter Simon.
Wouldn't go that far.
Okay, so it's tied 1-1 at the end of one round. Joyce Lenihan and Peter Simon.
You ready, Joyce?
I am.
The godfather of geekdom married his longtime girlfriend this past weekend, and it's fair to say he hopes the force will be with his marriage. Listen to this.
The newlywed said, "I do," on Saturday at Skywalker Ranch in Marin County. He is 69 years old. She is 44. They met at a business conference back in 2006.
Do you know who we're talking about?
George Lucas?
Very good.
That's a big age difference.
Yeah, it is a big age difference. Well, it's kind of a trend, though, I think, especially in Boston these days. Have you seen Bob Kraft?
Yes.
Oh, please, Marjorie.
Head of the Patriots?
By the way, there's a great... Did you read who married George Lucas and his new wife? Who was that?
Bill Moyers.
Bill Moyers obviously became a justice of the peace to do it. Hey, Joyce, I don't want to let you off the hook for a second.
Uh-oh.
We told the joys of Elizabeth Warren's campaign being launched in your kitchen or whatever. We read that First Night was dead, and then we read a story a few nights later that, in essence, the mayor, who's a pretty powerful, persuasive character, and some others are trying to raise money to keep it alive. Where do we stand now in June for First Night?
Well, you'd have to ask the city. I mean, I'm hearing the same thing that you're hearing, that they are planning on having a First Night, which I think is great. But the agency that I worked for is no longer in existence.
Oh, really?
That's right.
Were we the first night ever here?
We were. This would have been the 38th.
Whose idea was this 38 years ago?
Clara Wainwright was kind of the ringleader there, but a group of community activists and artists who, back in 1976, when the downtown was completely deserted, decided they wanted to start a different kind of New Year's celebration.
Terrific. Now, Peter Simon.
No, ask the question, as long as you ask one to Joyce, I want to just tell people who don't know about these calendars, because they're beautiful shots of Martha's Vineyard, beautiful tulips in April, and I think there's a bonfire now. This is the 2013 one I've got. I think it's in West Tisbury. This gorgeous picture of bonfire. The ferry coming in. If you've ever been to Martha's Vineyard, it's just so nostalgic and beautiful to have this calendar on your next to your refrigerator. It's not on it. It's next to it. And you're great photographer.
Do you relate to it even though you don't live on the vineyard?
Yes, because I went there. You have a picture of one of the great things that Martha's Vineyard does, if they still do it, when they have the Japanese lanterns. What do you call that
night?
Illumination night. And I went to Illumination night two or three times on a boat when I was a little girl. And it's one of those things that sticks with you your whole life because it's so magical. All these little gingerbread houses with all these little tiny Japanese lanterns all lit up.
What town does that?
That's Oak Bluffs.
Oak Bluffs.
Hey, Peter, before we ask you your question, I mentioned before that this trailer, for lack of a better expression, for your new DVD called Through the Lens is available on petersimon.com. Is the calendar and everything else you do on your website, too?
Yeah, I kind of sell almost my soul on my website.
Why not?
Yeah, the calendar is there. The big thing, though, is that the video that the trailer is selling, getting people interested in, is to be launched today as a Kickstarter.
Oh, so, it is.
So if you
so
go
how
to,
do people help you? I was going to say, go.
I hate to promote
just do it.
Shamelessly.
Go ahead.
Just do it.
Kickstarter.com, search Peter Simon, and we launched it today, and I'm trying to raise $12,000 for production costs and editing costs and final marketing and everything, PR, to get it off the ground and running by the end of the summer. That's my goal.
Fabulous. Go watch the trailer. It's terrific. You'll be totally committed. Here's your question to forge back into a tie.
Okay.
What court decision is Stephen Colbert talking about here?
And listen, folks, to their so-called judicial reasoning. Is unconstitutional as a deprivation of liberty of persons that is protected under the Fifth Amendment. Oh, please. I find it hard to believe that there are amendments after the second. Sounds made up.
Okay, the basis for two huge decisions this week, what was he talking about?
Oh, boy, I was afraid of this. I know there were two, and both of them went the wrong way. One, for me, one was the voting, changing the voting laws.
Yeah, that went the wrong way, but that was not the one. What's the other one? We're going to give you another chance because you're a nice guy.
I'm afraid of the wah, wah.
No. What was the major decisions this week that were actually greeted as really good news by a lot of people in the civil rights movements? Prop 8 and DOMA. We're going to give it to him. Peter Simon, give him the points. Thank you very much.
Okay, Joyce, you have anything you'd like to promote?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
You
good?
Yeah. Okay, just want to make sure. I want to be even Steven here. Okay, who's the author who could not remember his own book title when he was on with Jim and me earlier this week?
I want you to say the name of your book, every word included, without looking at anything. Can you do it?
Straight Flush.
Go ahead.
The true story of six.
I knew he couldn't do
it. Brothers.
No, I'm sorry. This is his own book, and he doesn't even know the title. This
Six,
is go ahead.
Who built a poker empire?
Oh my
all
God.
Down. Who built a million-dollar poker empire? I don't know.
This is pathetic. That was actually pretty funny. That's true, by the way. He didn't know the name of his own book.
He was close, but not quite. You know who that was?
I don't have a clue.
Okay, Peter, here's your chance to steal a question. You know who it is?
I'm wondering if he has Alzheimer's disease.
No, he does not.
How could you not remember the title of your own book?
Because it's like I got 50 words in
it.
We're going to give you a hint, and then we'll go back to you. Right. He's also the writer of a book, starting with you, Joyce, that was the basis for a book about what's the name of the guy from Facebook?
Zuckerberg.
Oh, Ben Mezrich?
That is correct.
That
give
is
her a
correct.
Half a point at least.
And here's the name of the book, Straight Flush, The True Story of Six College Friends Who Dealt Their Way to a $1 billion Online Poker Empire and How It All Came Crashing Down. No wonder we can't remember it.
That is kind of a tongue twister.
Yeah, get to the point, Ben, will you please?
He's still cashing the checks. Okay, Peter, here is your question. Okay. Peter Simon, great photographer, petersimon.com. Now, a well-known politician was sentenced to 7 years in jail and banned for life from holding public office. Why? Because he paid for sex with an underage prostitute. To give you a hint who this is, we're going to play you a citizen reacting to this verdict.
I'm sure there will be an amnesty soon. They wouldn't have sentenced him otherwise. I have always hated him. I have always wished him dead. But right now, he's the only one out of all of them that I can stand.
Okay, now who is this Italian woman talking about, please, Peter Simon?
I have to plead the fifth. I really don't know.
Why don't you plead the sixth instead? Okay, whatever it is.
I knew
seventh,
that,
whatever it
I
was.
Knew that. Wah, wah, wah.
It's coming. It's very painful, isn't it? Do you have any idea, Joyce Lenihan, who he is?
Berlusconi?
That is exactly right. Silvio Berlusconi.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, okay. He's another creepy guy.
Now, here's what happens here. We now enter our lightning round phase. Let me explain this to both of you. When we do the Joyce Lenihan, Peter Simon Venn diagram, what you two have in common is rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, you photograph rock stars. Joyce, you manage them, lodge them, whatever. So speaking of rocks, we're going to ask you questions about the pet rock. That was the 1975 fad where a rock was marketed as a live, low-maintenance pet, which came in a custom cardboard box. Why don't you start it, Marjorie?
Okay. Ready, Joyce? This is like an ABC multiple choice deal. Which among these three statements is true? The pet rock came with an A, 32-page instruction manual, B, a flea collar, or C, a notarized document that the rock was up to date on its shots.
I have no idea. I'm going to go with C.
That'd be wrong. You can steal it. This is your chance. Is it A or B, Peter Simon? Is it A, the 32-page instruction manual, or B, the flea color?
I'm going to go with A.
You are correct.
Exactly right. It's very
exciting. I remember that thing, believe
me too.
I had one.
Joyce
didn't
was
you
too
have
young.
One? You didn't have a pet rock?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Did your parents have
I
a pet
a dog.
Rock?
You just,
that's not, believe me, it does not count. Okay. This is for you, Peter. Mm. What time is it? Yes, we can do this one. Peter Dahl invented the pet rock. His inspiration came from what real life experience? What real life experience? Choose one of the following three, please, Peter Simon. A, when his pet turtle died, his parents didn't let him replace it, so he grew to think of rocks in the turtle habitat as his pets. B, he was at a bar with friends. They're complaining about what a pain it was to take care of pets. He thought a rock would be the perfect pet. It would not need to be fed, walked, bathed, groomed, and would not die. Or C, as a hobby, his great uncle decorated rocks to make them look like people. He thought it would be more interesting to think of a rock not as a human, but as an animal. Which of those is correct, Peter Simon, please?
Well, I actually have no idea, but B sounds the most interesting.
B is correct, Peter Simon. Thank you.
Okay, Joyce, who isn't young enough to remember pet rocks, or old enough to remember pet rocks. It was a huge fad nonetheless. It lasted only 6 months, the pet rock was. The Miami News wrote a profile of inventor Gary Dahl in 1977. What was the title of the piece? A, Between a Pet Rock and a Hard Place. B, People Who Live Off Pet Rocks Shouldn't Throw Stones. Or C, Gary Dahl, The Rise and Fall of a Rock Star.
They're all pretty good. Actually.
They are pretty good.
I'm going to go with A.
Very good. Very good. That is correct. Between a Pet Rock and a Hard Place was the headline.
What's the score after that, judges? This is getting very exciting, I should say. Oh, it's right
Peter
there.
Peter 4, Joyce 4.5.
Now, you know what this means, Peter Simon?
It means she's smarter than I am.
No, it does not, because you have one more question. Okay. This means that if you get this right, you go home to the vineyard with all the glory. If you get this wrong, I think you know what that means. Is that correct?
I might as well not go home and stay here overnight.
Exactly. Now, Peter, here it is. Question. The pet rock became available again on September 3rd, I didn't know this, 2012. What one of these was its 21st century update? A, the pet rock comes with a USB cable plugged into it. B, it comes with a microchip tracking device. Or C, it comes with a self-feeding pet bow. What is the answer? Which of those does it come? Boa? What? Bull. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. My apologies. A self-feeding pet bull. What is the answer to the question, please?
Ooh, I'm going to go for A, but I'm not at all sure.
You are the champion of this week's
oh
Friday
God,
News
I'm
quiz.
Oh, my God. I'm so lucky.
It is unbelievable. How does that feel, Peter? Be honest.
Well, I like Phyllis. I think she deserved it more than me.
Joyce, he thinks you deserve
the
prize.
That's very
sweet, but no.
I'm
sorry,
no,
Joyce.
No.
Tell us the three most famous people who've ever been in your kitchen, Joyce Lenihan.
Oh, dear. Eddie Vedder.
Well, that's pretty good.
Wow.
Courtney Love.
Whoa.
Wow.
Courtney Love?
And Elizabeth Warren.
And Elizabeth Warren.
Courtney Love.
Now, has Elizabeth Warren ever been in your kitchen, Peter Simon?
Actually, she was on the vineyard and gave a speech at a local community that I belong to, and I did get to be friendly with her, and I love her.
Yeah.
Those
She's a great candidate.
Not to mention superficially, she looks really great for someone who's in her 60s.
That's
she
true.
Not?
She does.
She's
she does.
Good
I think she's
woman.
Just great. I'm proud to
she's
be.
She's great.
I'm just proud to be a Democrat and proud to be a Massachusetts
Yeah, she sucked
person.
It to the big banks.
Yeah.
Peter Simon at petersimon.com. Joyce Lenihan, it's great to see you
thank
both.
You.
Thank you so much. It's good to see you. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening to all you guys. And while we're wrapping up the show, we are not going away. We're going to ask you to stick around for a couple of minutes. We'll be telling you how you can help us here at WGBH.
Keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much, Joyce.
Thank you.
I am Lori. I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I've never lived in the Boston area. The first thing I did was unpack my radio and then tune it in to WGBH. I think I started listening the day that Jim and Marjorie began on air, and so I've learned a lot from listening to their program. I believe it's important for listeners of public broadcasting to become a sustainer because it's easy, right? You know, also by doing a monthly contribution, it's just a small chunk out of your monthly expenses. And I think it's just important to support the programming that you utilize. So that's why I do it.
Give online at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424. But if you choose to give, and whatever you do choose to give, it really does matter a lot. This is your last chance to support our show before the end of the drive. Listener support is vital to keeping these programs free and available every day.
I want to give the number, 888-897-9424, or you can give online at WGBHnews.org. I have the best task, as I have every time. I get to thank some of the people who have given in the last hour and 50 minutes. Kurt in Wakefield, Jesse in Woburn, Meg in Littleton, Catherine in Concord, Carol in Brookline, Barbara in Saugus. Thank you all, and thank you all the others we didn't get time to thank on the air. Thank every single one
of
you.
Well, we have a few more to thank, actually. We have Patrick in Westwood, Jocelyn in Bedford, Judy and Kathleen in Lexington, Donna in Sutton, and Tina in Mashpee. Thank you all for listening to me and Jim. Thank you for listening to everything on 89.7 WGBH.
You know, this means this is our last part of the pledge for
yes,
this
it
week.
Is.
It's been an honor, and I mean this, to participate. And we've listened to pledges so long as big fans of the station. But it's also great not just to participate on this end of the microphone, but to see the kind of support the station is getting, which it richly deserves. And I'm not talking about 12 to 2. I'm talking about 24/7. It's a terrific place. It deserves your support. And it's great to hear from your contributions that you people agree.
Well, absolutely. And the quality of the callers and the quality of the listeners we get, I mean, it's just astounding. People email, and we don't get to read every single one of them, but the emails are so thoughtful and insightful. It's really just fun. I can steal ideas from them all the time.
I'm going to give the number one last time. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. This whole thing is over on Sunday. Our fiscal year ends on Sunday, June 30th. So we really urge you to give if you haven't. We thank you if you have. If you have friends who love the station as much as we do, both listening and working at it, please urge them to call the number 888-897-9424 or go online. It's quite simple and fast, by the way, WGBHnews.org.
He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. Thank you for listening.